Welcome back, everybody. Tim of Kuan Yin Healing, and we have actually made it to session 8. When did that happen? It seems like we just got started. Wow.
No kidding.
I know it. It's. I remember doing 1 and 2, and then suddenly it was 8. So. Well, anyway.
I don't know where all the time went. I really don't.
Yeah. Some timeless void. One of those places, how does the joke go? If I give you a penny for your thoughts and you put in your 2 cents worth, where does the other penny go? All right. Well, anyway, before we get going in then here, I'd like to hear about how things are going with you all. We were talking at the end of last week about how things were before, what they're like now, and you've had some time to think about it. And I've gotten a fair amount of email on this, so thank you very much for that. But I would love it if folks could share a little bit of where you were before this program, where you are now, and as well as any questions that you have or things that are different for you now. So just jump right in and be the first to volunteer. So just jump right in and be the first to volunteer.
Hi, this is Linnea.
Hi, Linnea.
One of the things I'm experiencing because of the reconnection and so on down the line, just keeping it up front, is an increase in creativity and how quickly inspiration keeps popping up.
Yeah. Isn't it nice when everything is lined up smoothly so the pipeline actually works like a pipeline?
It's refreshing to feel your brain working.
Yeah.
So efficiently.
Mm-hmm. No, really, I kind of liken that to, you know, if you've been sitting around for a while and finally one day you get out and you're in the fresh air and you're running and you're, you know, using your whole body again, it's very much like that. It's like, yeah, I feel alive. Awesome. Can't wait to see what you do with all that creativity.
You'll have to come to my backyard.
Okay. I've seen your backyard. I can't.
Going, what is she doing back there?
Yeah, I can't imagine what else. Yeah. It certainly is a thriving area, for sure. Okay. Now you don't have to go first, everybody. Who's second?
Colleen here.
Hi, Colleen.
Hi. I know I haven't been as involved, I guess, as I might have liked, but I've made sure that I've caught every Tuesday night, and I haven't gotten my regular meditation starting, well, until the last few days, and I just wanted to say that I finally picked up the Ram Dass book, and I'm just delighted reading it because I've had such resistance to meditating for years, and yet really a stronger attraction all the time too. And somehow I don't know. It's sort of like I feel like I've been getting closer to being successful and committing to something, and particularly meditation. So somehow his writing is really very soothing and inviting, and kind of takes maybe some more of the resistance away. And I had read actually one of his books, Compassion, last winter, and I was kind of disappointed in it. I don't know what it was. So that was maybe part of the reason I didn't pick it up right away. But anyhow, I know I will benefit more as I go along and go through the course again. And one question I had was, whether the how long the recordings will be up. Like, will there be a limited time where we can download those?
The recordings will be up until the end of time.
Oh, okay. Oh, great. Excellent.
So you have lifetime ownership of this material.
Great.
What
a deal.
I think so.
Yeah.
And the transcripts are behind because my dictation software wasn't working on week 6, so I'm still working on week 6. But I will do just what I did for the other weeks. There will be, you know, the recordings are already up, but the transcripts will be up as I get to them, and I'll also do a couple more short videos, you know, helping with the homework on those as well, just little tips and things you might find useful.
Great. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have copied off the transcripts that have, you know, been available till now, so I do have that too. So yeah, I really appreciate the evenings, the calls. And I appreciate everyone on the call and your leadership. So even though I haven't participated a lot, I'm not battering myself for it, and that's a big step for me.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with doing it the slow way. You know, just because I happen to pick 8 weeks doesn't mean you have to do all this in 8 weeks, and you are not alone. You know, I think roughly half the people are, you know, on whatever week, and that's just fine. You know, go through it as you can, go back through it, work it as you can, and part of that's just the reality of life. You know, I took a 20-week program from one of the top social consciousness leaders in the country, and I did just what you said. I listened to all the calls, or at least the recordings, and of the 20 modules, I did 3. I was just busy, and actually, I'm sitting down to do them now, and that's just fine. You know, it's and actually, he said the same thing that for his program. It's you are where you are, and as long as you're moving forward, it's great. The Facebook page will also be up until the end of time, and other people aren't on week 8 either, and so you can continue to post and talk to each other, and you know, there will be new people coming into the program, you know, to getting the recorded version of it as well, to talk to and help each other out with. So just keep moving forward and whatever pace, as long as you're moving forward, all is well.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. Yes, I do feel like I've moved forward, you know, and I will revisit. So thank you.
Sure.
Great. It is great.
And I look at that page. You can still find me there. So. Awesome.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey, it's Eileen.
Right.
Yeah, I really do appreciate that you recorded all of that stuff and are putting the transcripts up. I've only gone back to a few of them, but I actually was feeling, I've worked these 8 weeks really intensely, and I was feeling like, oh, I really need a break. And I picked up a novel. It's called The Last Shaman. I'm not sure if you've read it. And the beginning of it talked about the law of abundance. This guy is talking how his law of abundance doesn't work because he doesn't know himself. And then he's called to go on a hero's journey, and he refuses the call. And I'm like, oh, this sounds way too familiar. Said, well, you know, maybe it's not time for a break. Maybe it's just time to go back to the beginning and reread it all.
Reminds me of that old Fire Sign Theater joke line. You know, wherever, no matter where you go, there you are.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I think it's cool that, you know, when we start to notice these patterns that have been in front of us the whole time, but we just didn't see them. That's really nice. And also, the other nice thing about having the recordings and the transcripts is that, say, for example, if you listen to them again next year, you would hear things you didn't hear before, because you're in a completely different space at that point. I find that all the time. Every so often I'll go back and I'll spend a week or two revisiting some program I've taken before. And it's completely different. So, nice. All right, more sharing. More sharing, that's your cue.
Hi, Tim. This is Carol.
Hi, Carol.
Do you want sharing about things that happened in the class or after effects?
Oh, all of the above.
All of the above. Okay. Well, one thing that I realized from one of your early exercises where you had us write down the list of what we wanted and why,
mm-hmm.
I always got to the bottom line, and it was because I wanted either peace, abundance, or love in every situation. And it was just,
yeah. It
was like, wow. So that was something that I really, it struck me. And the other exercise was the time you were talking about addictions as habits.
Mm-hmm.
And that got my attention because I had never really thought of a habit as an addiction. But then I realized that after my automobile accident, I had fallen into the habit of not tackling something that I didn't really want to do because I kept telling myself, I don't feel physically up to this.
Yeah.
And this, let's see, that would have been in June, I guess, May, maybe, when you had us do that. I got to thinking, you know, it's been 2 years since that accident. There isn't any reason why I'm not physically able to do this, so I need to change.
Mm.
And I've actually tackled my project, and I'm making progress on it. But I didn't even realize that I had just fallen into this habit of not tackling it. So the suggestion of meditating in nature, I really like that. I just have a renewed appreciation of nature, and I'm actually grateful that I'm living in this time and age because we must take action to preserve the planet. So, and I'd like to tell everybody I'm an activist for freedom from fracking. So if you have an opportunity, jump on that. Another thing, after the reconnection, I just felt a sense of peace and calm and more of an acceptance of the way things were. I can say I have more compassion in every situation, and I don't feel judgmental toward people or situations. And this lightens just every day, the way I go about my day, I feel lighter. I do have feelings and opinions, but they aren't really judgments. So it's like a new way of looking at life. And the last thing is, and what really resonated with me in reading Eric Pearl's book, is the oneness with Source. That just makes me feel so good because I know that I'm a co-creator of my life because of that oneness with Source. So it's a great program. Thank you, Tim.
Well, thank you. You're very welcome. All very wonderful things. Absolutely. Okay, well, I guess we'll jump into some content here. And see if I can get all these controls working properly. Let's see. And hopefully the dictation's working so that I don't have another long, long project ahead. Great. All right. So session 8 is Mastery of the Two Worlds. We started off in the world of the comfort zone, and we stepped out of the comfort zone into, for lack of a better term, the magical world, and have been doing our exploring there. And the key points is the as Dambiga Louise calls them, the three masteries. First of all, awareness with a small a. You know, before we can do anything, we have to pay attention to what's going on. We have to know what's going on to take a good look at things and to be aware. Once become aware, then we can master transformation. We can't change things we're not aware of. And transformation is a mastery and not just a process, because if we want things to change, then something's got to change. You know, we have to do some things different. We have to be different ourselves, and that's why our early step, our first session was called Stepping into Being. Once we're able to be aware and make those transformations, then we can act with intent. Okay, we've said this before, that the problem that people run into often, they try to start with intention without being aware, without transforming. So those two things are crucial, but once we do those things, once we've managed those things, then we can start to act with intent. And so that's part of where we're going today. And a reminder that intent is the same, and this concept is the same as love. Okay, so, you know, follow your bliss. What do you love? Where are you drawn? That's the place for intention. And it's really important. Remember that there are only two motivations, love and fear. And so if we're not looking at intention from a place of love, then we're acting out of fear. There are many, many practical examples of this. So, for example, often people will want to create a small business, for example, or some other kind of project, community thing. And instead of doing what they love, they'll say, well, I guess I had better start here, you know, and do this kind of small thing. Now, if they want to, there's certainly wisdom in testing things and making sure they worked, but that's not what I'm talking about. What they do is, instead of doing what they want, they do what they feel they have to. And that's acting out of fear, and it holds them back. And even if they're successful at it, they're doing something they don't actually want to do, right? So it's very important that we, because this is a habit for us, to do what we think we have to, instead to look at, let's jump right to love. What is it we want to do? And let's start looking at how we can make this happen now. Not only is it a better choice and better option, it's our only realistic choice. We're just used to thinking about this backwards. So one frequent question that I hear, I've heard some of you ask this or post it in the Facebook group, and this, a lot of people get stuck at this point, which is, how do I find my purpose, right? How do I discover my purpose? What is my purpose? And listen carefully. This is a really important point. You don't find your purpose. You don't discover your purpose. You don't lie around searching for your purpose. You create your purpose. It's not laying there waiting to be found. It is something that you create. And you create it from what you love. Okay? You create it from love. Purpose is not something you find. Purpose is something that you create. In a way, you know, that immediately sounds kind of scary, but if you think about it for a moment, you realize how wonderful it is. Because all that search about finding your purpose, it's over. It's over today. Create any purpose you wish. Okay? This is what intention is. Okay? And that's the power of the world of possibilities that this is. Okay? And so when you're looking for purpose, when you're deciding to decide what is it I love, what do I want to create, where do I want to go from here, go right back to paying attention, to being aware. And one of the things to be aware of is, am I acting out of love or am I acting out of fear? Am I trying this ball because I'm doing very smart market testing, or I'm just kind of testing the water just to check so before I jump in, or
Hello?
Hi.
Hello?
Did we all lose Tim?
I think we lost Tim.
Yeah, I think we lost him.
I wonder if he knows that we lost him.
Well, who's been... Somebody hung up and called in again. Who was
I
that?
Did.
We did too. We hung up. I thought it was my line.
Yeah, I thought I'd just see.
How did we get unmuted then?
It does that when the person...
the moderator?
Hangs up, I believe.
Yeah, because I just sort of thought, I wondered before times too, like how he would know whether it's
this
working,
really
whether he's being heard.
No, I don't know. Did anybody call him?
Well, I could send him an email.
Yeah, I was thinking that my computer is not bent.
Let's see.
Because he might want to hold his breath. He's just talking away there.
I'll call him on his other line there.
Sure.
Okay.
Sounds good. Although he probably won't answer if he's talking. Maybe some of his Equipment broke down.
Anybody out there?
Yes, I'm here. Yes, I said maybe his maybe he's having technical issues that he's trying to fix, or maybe just doesn't even realize that he's not being heard.
Hey there.
Oh, hey. There he is. I knew you'd
show
up again.
I went back to unmute you, and there was no sound. I could see you moving. So where did you lose me?
I was going to say,
put down pay
about
attention.
5 minutes ago, 6 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Go back
geez.
And paying attention to awareness. Search
oh,
for
goodness.
Your purpose.
I'm
You've been talking
start
to yourself
over
for a while,
then.
Tim.
You said
oh,
something
wonderful.
About, am I acting out of love or out of fear?
Okay. All right. Well, am I acting out of love or out of fear? Very often what happens is that people will think small. They'll like, well, you know, I don't really want to jump into this thing. I'll just do this other smaller thing. And the problem with that is that's fear-based, right? That's not really something that they want to do. It's one thing if we're like maybe testing out something a little bit, see if it works out okay, and then moving forward. But if we are, just really afraid to do what we want to do and we're settling for something else instead, that's really fear-based. That's not really doing what we love. So it comes back to paying attention and just watching ourselves. Making sure that we're doing that. If we have trouble deciding what we want to create or what might be aligned, it's going back to spiritual practice. Remember that imagination, right? Creativity. If you're going to create your purpose, you need imagination. And to, imagination is, think of it as image in, okay? It's the image coming in. When we really get this part, that's when we really have freedom to live. If you go back to way before the program, we're thinking about the comfort zone. Okay, how do I leave my comfort zone? How do I get past the fear of leaving my comfort zone and stepping into this, for lack of a better term, magical land? Well, today you can look back and realize that, okay, really the question is just bigger than that. That doesn't really have a lot of meaning, right? There really isn't a comfort zone. There never really was. We don't really have those kind of options there. That the world is just bigger than that. And that's an exciting thing to recognize that and see that 95% of what we're worrying about just isn't even important, and a lot of it doesn't even exist. It feels great, and it really opens up the possibilities for us. And that's where I paused for questions to.
and there was when you realized you didn't have an audience.
Nobody was behind me. So, any thoughts there? Any thoughts?
You said 95% of what we're worried about doesn't exist. Is that what you said?
Right. A lot of the things that we are afraid of just doesn't exist, and what doesn't matter. Look at how many of our fears existed nowhere except in our heads, right?
Uh-huh.
Or the whole thing about, I'm afraid about leaving my comfort zone. And look back later and you realize, there never was a comfort zone, it's like the
because
old story.
It was always scary, you mean? Because we were never comfortable?
Kind of like,
that kind of thing.
Right? They tell me that you can fence in sheep with just a string. And this is how the comfort zone is for us.
It's just because you've never tried it.
Exactly. Yeah. And having done so, we have the freedom to just move forward.
Okay.
Now, here's the thing, though. Now that we've had that, now that we can see those possibilities, this is not a place where we can stay. We can't just sit down now and enjoy the good feeling. Well, we can for a bit, but not long term. And the reason we can't stay there, two reasons. One is there's no growth. Okay, there's an old saying that says it's easy to be a holy man on a mountain. Okay, it's coming back into the world that is really the test of just how far we've grown. Ram Dass has at one point said, if you think you're enlightened, go move in with your parents for a week. And I've never ever heard anybody say, what? What does that mean? No. And the other reason you can't stay there is that it's boring. There's a wonderful poem, Alfred Lord Tennyson, The Eagle. Short poem, and it says, he clasped the crag with crooked hands, close to the sun in lonely lands, ringed with the azure world he stands. The wrinkled sea beneath him crawls. He watches from his mountain walls, and like a thunderbolt, he falls. There's so much imagery in here, Greek imagery and fall from grace and so forth. But the basic concept here that he's up in the heavens in this perfect land, and it's just dull. And underneath, you know, he sees the old, he sees the birth, you know, the wrinkled sea crawling, the whole cycle of birth and death and vulnerability and pain. And he sees all this and in an instant makes this choice to fall. And again, we see this in our stories, in our myths, in our beliefs, you know. In Paradise Lost, Milton has Lucifer saying, better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. Adam and Eve bite from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. They would rather know good and evil than remain in innocence. And how many of you, looking back, you know, to some things that have happened that turned out really badly, even knowing now what you didn't know then, you would do it again?
Would we?
Yeah, because at the time, you still there, Tim? We lost him again.
Lost him again.
Well, you know, I heard a very light beeping. I wonder if some of his equipment, batteries or something, are low. Did anyone else hear beeping?
No. Hopefully to God he knows how to figure it out. He's probably got a lot more technical experience than I do, for sure. He didn't really say what had happened before, eh? Well, isn't it odd that the very last class where it hang on his every word?
I know.
And we've never had these kind of difficulties before.
Is he helping us cut the cord? Is that what's going on here?
Hey, that must be it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the right. Spirit world is you know, assisting him. You're
there
probably right.
There are no coincidences.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty.
Somebody going to fly an email or?
Maybe hi, this is Lori.
Or
hi.
Facebook, message him or something.
Welcome.
Hi.
Tim's taking a break.
He doesn't know he's taking a break.
Yeah, we're having he's having technical difficulties. This is the second.
Did he say that?
No.
Well, I mean, it must be some kind of.
Let's just say
technical.
It's happened once before on this call. This is the second
time
on
this
call.
Yeah, let's not make any assumptions.
The last one, though, was at the end of the call, I think.
Right.
The end. Yeah.
But this is
oh,
the second
right.
time
yeah.
on this call.
Mm-hmm.
Is somebody going to send him an email? Somebody near a computer?
I am. I can do it again.
Huh?
I'm not sure he got that before.
What?
My first email.
How did he discover he was not talking to anyone?
It was when he stopped to ask questions and nobody responded.
Right.
I'll shoot him a call again on his other line. I get his message machine, but I don't know, maybe he'll hear it ringing and...
Yeah, tweak him somehow.
Maybe you could get a hold of his dog. Just kidding. Well, I thought I was late getting on, so I'm glad I'm not late. I am, but I'm not. He won't know the difference, will he? Maybe we should just start our own meeting.
Well, yeah, I thought we should probably make the best use of our time, hey?
Yeah.
I suggested after this that we ought to put him on retainer just for a group healing once a month.
Oh, that would be great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
There he is again.
So what happened?
Houdini. Who done it?
I don't know. We didn't leave.
Oh, man.
We tried calling the dog.
Even the conferencing system doesn't want this to be over. Okay.
I sent you an email. Are you anywhere near your computer?
Yes.
Okay. Did you get the email?
No.
Oh, okay. We were trying to figure out how to get a hold of you.
Okay. Well, where did I cut off this time?
Tennyson, this poem. Talking about that.
I think it was the poem.
Okay.
The poem? Okay.
Okay, so not very far back then. All right, so the whole point of Tennyson's poem. Did I read the whole poem? Did I talk about it yet?
Yes.
Okay, so we're through that. Pain and suffering?
You read the poem, but I don't think you discussed the poem.
Okay. So the whole point of Tennyson's poem, then, is that we are the eagle is in the heavens, right? Separate. It's gorgeous. But the eagle is looking down at the world where there's, you know, the sea is wrinkled. It crawls. It sees the whole cycle of birth and old age. And there's a lot of Greek mythology in here, you know, the thunderbolt and the eagle is sacred to Zeus and the whole idea of falling from grace. But in a second, the eagle chooses to fall from the mountain and go into the world, knowing about the pain and the vulnerability of birth and life, of being born and growing old and going through that cycle. Because the heavens are, as Tennyson describes it, boring. There's no growth there. There's nothing to do. You know, in, and we see this repeatedly in our literature, in our myths, in our stories. In Milton's Paradise Lost, he describes Lucifer as saying, you know, better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. Adam and Eve, you know, bite from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. They would rather know and suffer than to live in innocence, even in Eden. If you think back honestly, I think that most of us would come up with at least a few of these, where looking back at your life at some point where you know, things were a mess, you really crashed and burned, but knowing today what you didn't know then, at least some of those things, you'd do it again. Because, you know, it was a wild, passionate ride there before it crashed and burned. And, you know, this is kind of the whole point of stepping out, is that in the pain and in the limitation is where we find growth. I love the separation of pain and suffering, that pain is inevitable. You know, in life there is going to be pain. There just is. But suffering is optional. Suffering is a mental reaction to that pain. In fact, sometimes people even suffer for no good reason whatsoever. You know, they just get wrapped up in something. This is the beauty of one of the many beauties of Campbell's The Hero's Journey as well, that, you know, the tragedies in the Atonement with the Father at times are just as important and just as blessed as the grace we get from the goddess. That in the same way that, you know, nature's terror and nature's beauty, we understand as the majesty of nature, that this is all part of the majesty of life. And when we can get past that, we can embrace the Taoist version of getting beyond duality. When we stop seeing things as this is good and this is bad, and instead just noticing that things are, we really stick to a step forward into awareness with a capital A. And the other reason for not just staying stuck in our new place is that, you know, coming up into higher vibrations and better understandings is not just about us. The whole point of the Oversoul is that we are connected to others. We're connected to all of creation. We are not separate from it all. And to separate ourselves, bless you, to separate ourselves as somehow above or distinct from that is to make a grave error. We simply are not getting it yet. Because the world that we live in is a world that is, in fact, created by our own minds and egos. And it's a reflection of us. And to say that what I'm creating doesn't get it, but I get it, is simply contradictory. And that's where I pause to find out, once again, there is nobody standing behind me. So, very humbling experience. So, any thoughts?
Yeah, I'm happy. Again, I've heard, you know, duality defined before, but I guess I never got clearly that there's not good or bad. So basically, no judgment. It just is what it is, and I appreciate that.
All right, any other thoughts? See if I can move forward and remain on the line. Somebody at a free conferencing just is having trouble getting it, wants to hear me say it twice. All right, this brings us then to the return journey. Okay, the last part of the hero's journey, or the virgin's promise, if you relate better to that, or whatever does it for you. It's all just, you know, archetypes, a way of looking at this. The last part of looking at all this is the return journey. So, the first thing is to understand that the return is important. Again, we can't just stay there. If we do try to stay there, at least if we follow them, the monomyth, as Campbell lays it out, one of two things will happen. Either there will be some rescue, in quotes. Somebody outside persuades us to come back, or, you know, saves us, which is really a way of saying, get back in here. And the other would be the magical flight, which is you've overstayed your welcome, you're in some place you haven't really paid the dues to be yet, and so you end up, you know, running back for your own safety. But either way, it's a reflection of the lessons that we've learned, and the reason that we have to come back is to share the elixir. Okay? The whole point of going up into the realms of the gods is to get this, you know, symbolically, this elixir to take back. The whole reason of whole point of a tragedy in the theater sense is that something is learned, okay, or that something is gained, or that you've learned some secret. As we were talking earlier, you know, the fruits of the journey that you have been on for the last 8 weeks is that you are bringing back several insights that you didn't have before. You've learned. Your eyes are open. Things are different. You know, and in particular, just learning to pay attention to our different levels, physical, emotional, mental, Buddhic, Atman, and to move forward in coherence and to pay attention to ourselves, its frequency, vibration, and energy, and looking at all those levels. I mean, that itself is a major change, a major way of looking at life, and something really important to bring back. And that's then the whole point about bringing anything back is to share it with others. Growth is never just for ourselves. Growth is for everyone. When we grow, everyone grows. And it's crucial. So the last major part of all this process is that it's crucial that this be shared and it be used to help other people. Without that, we really just didn't get it. Okay? That sharing it isn't just nice, you know, now that we're wonderful and advanced and enlightened, that's just ego. But to understand that the whole point of our journey and our process and our growth was so that we can help others, that's getting it. That's starting to understand this at the level of the older soul. That said, we run into a problem, okay? Are we familiar with Plato's cave, the allegory of the cave? Yes? No? Perhaps?
Nope.
Okay. It's a really wonderful way of explaining the problems of the return journey. The situation that Plato sets up hypothetically is that there are these people born in this cave. They've been this way all their life, so they don't mind this at all. It's what they know and accept. They are chained in the cave such a way that they can only see the back wall of the cave. They cannot see the mouth of the cave. And they're fine with this. They don't know any better. And outside the cave, there's this big fire, and people who are free are walking back and forth in front of the fire and with various objects. And as they do, it casts shadows on the back of the cave. And these shadows are what the people in the cave understand to be reality. Okay. In fact, Plato often talked about our world as a world of shadows. The world that we see being nothing but a shadow of the real world of ideas. And so those flickering shadows are what the people in the cave take to be reality. And one day, one of the people is freed from the cave, and as you can imagine, probably taken out, kicking, screaming, and terrified of how drastically different everything is. But after a while, you know, are walking around and gets to know what the sun is about and the fire and discovers reality and freedom and, you know, starts to get a tan and is feeling great and knows that what he really has to do at this point is go back and share this knowledge with the other people in the cave. It's just too great a thing to keep to oneself. The problem is that as soon as you walk back into the cave, well, the first problem is you're walking from bright light back into darkness. You can't see a thing, oh great seer, you know, tripping over things. And the second, as soon as you try to describe this process, which, you know, the nature of reality to the people in the cave, they think you're nuts. You know, what are you talking about? This book is this small little straight edge thing. Everybody knows what a book is. It's that big black flickering thing. You know, known it all my life. And this is the challenge. The people will cling to the illusion because it's what they know. This is the challenge of anyone taking the elixir back on the return journey. People will embrace the darkness, and people embrace the darkness because they're in their comfort zone. It's what they know. As Ruiz says, they are afraid to live. You know, challenging things would mean living for real. And the third, it's like the tarot card of the devil at the beginning of that spiritual line in the major arcana. You know, the devil, like other cards, has the will, intuition, and awareness. It has that divine triangle there. But everybody's in chains. But the chains are just sitting around their necks loosely. All they have to do is take them off, but they stand there in chains. Okay? This is the nature of most people. This is the nature of the comfort zone. So what do we do about this? How do we move forward with this? How do we help people with this? First is compassion. You know, where people are trapped and stuck, you were there once, right? You get it. You know what it's like. Other people are still going to be there. And you can remember what it's like. And we're helped as well when we do this. This is one of the major reasons to help others, is that it helps us. As you see other people struggling in this, it will reinforce all this for yourself. And as you can compassionately help people work their way through that, you yourself get a refresher course and keep this green. You can, it's important to balance help with allowing them to fight. You know, they're at the beginning of this journey in many cases, and they are looking at the other, and the other needs to be fought. And to say, well, really, the other is just you. They're not there yet. They need to fight with it. They need to go through the process. They need to feel the pain, because that's the process of atonement with the Father. This is the process that builds the skill and awareness that gives them to mastery to move forward. Now, it doesn't mean that we just abandon them. Remember that atonement with the Father is tempered with meeting of the goddess, with mercy, okay, with grace. But we need to balance that help with letting them do what it is they need to do, or they just won't be ready. I like what Ralph Waldo Emerson said about this. He said, wear your knowledge like a pocket watch. Take it out when asked the time, and then put it back. You know, and what we can do is we can love. You know, act out of love and let that be a guidance. You know, geez, what should I do? Well, forget about what I should do and ask the divine, you know, what needs to happen here. But absolutely share. And there are various ways to share other than here, I know something you don't know, right? We can share with words, certainly, but we can share with our behavior. We can share with our deeds. We can share simply by the way that we're being. Okay. One of the most powerful things that happens in AA, it's what attracts people. It's how people choose sponsors. It's not something so much something somebody says. It's just you just look at this person and you go, you know, I want what you have. You seem so calm and content and happy, and I want that. How do you do that? And that's a large part of what you can do here, is simply by being who you can best be. People will notice that. It will be peaceful around you. You know, you walk into a room and you don't have to say anything. People start to feel better. So simply being the best that you can do on your own journey will help people as well. But and just understanding their process and letting them have their process and helping them through and loving them through, just as other people do for you. I love Ram Dass's point about this. He says, we're all just walking each other home.
Hmm.
Yeah, and that's a good thing to remember when, like, so, no, they're just not getting it or whatever. We're all just walking each other home. Okay? And also reminding that if we're surrounded by people who aren't getting it, remember that we are creating this world. Why are we creating a world where people don't get it? Okay? It is in some way a reflection of us. And we can go right back to the physical awareness thing. And say, what is it in me that is contributing to this? Because on the return journey, you know, as we walked into our magical world, we shed our ego, and at higher stages of initiation, we even killed it off. But when we go back to the ordinary world, we have to pick up our ego again. And so, a couple things about this. One is that now we can start to see the ego in a larger sense. The ego itself is not bad. The tendency of the ego to pretend it is all that exists is what's bad. And trying to control everything is what's bad. Okay? Or to get out of good and bad, it's what causes the problems. So we can understand the ego in a different way. One of my favorite ways to understand ego is it's not me as separate from you and everybody else. Rather, ego is a point of view. I'm standing looking at the universe from this particular vantage point. It's neither better nor worse. It means in some ways it's limiting, but in other hands, it gives me a very unique and special experience at this corner of the universe that nobody else gets to have. So there are absolutely reasons for ego and to embrace ego, as long as we don't fall into the traps. Having been through this, you can much better pay attention to the appropriate ways to live with your ego and not let your ego be all that is your being. The other thing is that at first this is going to feel strange. And you should be glad that it feels strange. It should feel strange. Okay? Who you are has changed. This is good. You know, this is rebirth in a major way. Look at the changes that have happened here in just 2 months, right? You simply aren't the same. This program makes a pretty gutsy promise, and that's transformation in 2 months, but that is exactly what's happened. And be okay with that. Just as you reestablish your relationship with ego, is understand that it's not the same ego you laid down. Things are different now, and that's a good thing. What you want to be careful about is that you don't simply get restuck in your new vantage point. You know, we got nicely unstuck from where we were, and we're moving ahead, and we've made progress. It's possible to simply get stuck in a different place. If you find your set happening or that it has happened at some point, you know what to do at this point. But even better would be to consciously pay attention and make sure that you don't get restuck. There will be highs and lows. You know, oh, I'm through this. I feel so much better. I'm at peace. This is great. And for a while, you enjoy it. Okay? And then what happens? one day you get up and it all goes to hell. Like, what in the world happened? Well, one of two things happened. One is, without realizing, you got stuck. And when you got stuck, you know what happens when we get stuck? The card after the devil is the tower, right? Lightning strikes the tower. It can't be sustained, and you understand now why, having been through this once. But the other reason we have highs and lows isn't the roller coaster that it can seem like, but rather, it's actually what my AA sponsor used to tell me, is peeling the onion. Because, you know, when you start working through these things, you work with the outer layers first, and you deal with them, and they get all chopped up nicely and whatever you're going to do with it, and that's all great. And that's all progress, and you keep that progress. But then there's another layer, right? And here we go again. But you go through that layer, and then you chop that up, and you deal with that layer. And then there's another layer underneath that. And each time you keep going more and more in, more and more deeper. The other thing, as you go more and more deeper, you start getting closer and closer to a more emotional sensitive course. Okay? One of the reasons that romantic relationships can really bring up stuff rapidly is that we open up and we show more vulnerable parts of ourselves than we normally do. And that's what's happening here, and it's not a bad thing. It's progress, actually. You know, you're now dealing with things that before were simply covered up. And so the process of dealing with this at first, once you notice that that's what's going on, be aware of it, but be glad that you're aware of it. Because the reality is, even just a few months back, you wouldn't even have noticed the difference. But now you're aware of it. And remember that awareness comes before transformation. Transformation comes before intent. So this is progress. Okay. And having been through the process once, you know how to do it. The description of the hero's journey isn't a single journey, right? But it's a series of journeys that their hero makes over and over again, every time a little deeper, every time a little further in. And in addition to that, you know, pick any story that you wish. You know, the hero who sets out on this journey is not the same hero, not only at the end of it, it's not even the same hero in the middle of it. Who this person is, what this person wants, changes as the journey progresses. Okay? And this simply, the journey takes on greater and greater meaning as you get closer and closer to the purpose that you're creating. Or purposes. So, be aware of this progress, of this process. Just simply, really just that. Be aware of it. Know what it is. Know that you know how to deal with it now. And simply repeat the journey in deeper ways. Good place to pause for thoughts before I get into this final piece. I'm sorry, what?
We are still here.
Ah, yay. I know. Now I'm watching it. Okay. I know I've talked to a couple of you privately about some peeling the onion moments already. So that's really it. Just simply be aware that it will happen and that it's a good thing. If it stopped happening, it means that your journey is over and suddenly you're not growing anymore. Does the journey have an ending point? Yes, it does. It ends when you are in pure awareness with the divine. So I'm guessing for most of us that may not happen this lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no reason that it needs to. Remember that Joseph Campbell said, we look at our deals, you know, as a measure of where we are in this journey. And the ultimate boon that our hero is seeking is pure life force, pure source energy, step down to where we are, to the nature of our desires. And they aren't wrong. They are steps along our path. And again, you know, well, how do I know if I'm on my path? How do I know I'm doing it wrong? You get to create it. If it's important enough that you want it, it's divine. So, coming full circle then, you know, how do I find my purpose? Here's some thoughts on how to go about creating your purpose, not finding your purpose. And the first is to think about, what's your vision? And notice the word vision. You know, we don't say plan, objective. What's your vision? You know, again, we're right back to images. Very often we communicate with the divine through images, right? How do we get above thoughts? Images flash into our heads. You know, look at all the ancient symbols, tarot, shamanism, ancient alchemy. Symbols, symbols, symbols. Images, images, images. You know, vision. So what do you put into your vision? Start right from the bigger source. Start with what people do you want in your vision? You know, who are the people who are important to you? Who jazzes you up? What kind of people do you care about? And to be honest, don't say what you think you should say when you're thinking through these things. You know, the reality, you know, well, I love everybody. I would actually venture to say that that's probably not true. So at the very least, that you don't love everyone equally. You know, and that's fine as well. There wouldn't be people who are special to us if we loved everyone equally. Right? So it doesn't mean that you have to hate other people, you know, some of the people. But who are the people who you really love? This is your tribe. These are the people you would spend all your time with, or most of your time with. These are the people facing the kinds of issues you love to work with. Get honest about that. Who are the people that this vision is for? And you notice I started with this one. So right from the beginning, it's not just a vision for you. Okay? You get to be included. That's great. Okay? But it has got to be a vision that has a relationship to other people. What are your passions? Joseph Campbell hit it dead on. Follow your bliss. This is a sublime truth. It's not the throwaway phrase it can sound like. You know, your bliss is the divine talking. Your bliss is the divine talking. You are supposed to feel great. It's a big part of my mission is to share with people that they are supposed to be joyous and to feel great and for life to move forward smoothly, differently than they might think. Okay, you are supposed to feel great. And if to the extent that we resist this means that we are fearing the divine. You know, I'm not sure I want to feel great. You get to decide that, but it's you're doing it the hard way. One of my favorite examples is my friend Joe, Cleveland, not Campbell. Joe is a very good amateur musician, and his instrument is the banjo. And, you know, he's from the Midwest, and he's got this clean-cut, good boy look, and he's a little nerdy and a little, you know, you can just see this guy sitting down playing his banjo, and that is what he loves to do. And you say, like, okay, so following his bliss, what's the deal there? Well, because Joe followed his bliss and loves to play the banjo, he met when he moved out to Syracuse, he met Dana Cook, a graphic designer and a guitar player. The two of them started a band. That band, under Joe's inspiration, led to a community project called the Focus Project that brings excellent musical acts from all over the country, even the world, to Central New York, a wonderful nonprofit organization. So a major community benefit because Joe loves the banjo and related folk music. When Kristen at Maine Memorial Church was looking for somebody who might want to do an alternative music service for the church, and she was looking for who might even talk to, Joe at the Focus Project came up. She talked to Joe, and Joe was agreeable and ended up taking his banjo weekly down to Maine Memorial and working with Kristen about this. And Joe and Kristen fell in love. I was at their wedding. Directly a result of following that banjo around. And from there, Joe decided that, you know, teaching wasn't really doing for him what he wanted it to do. He decided to go off to seminary school. He did. He got his Master's of Divinity, became a Unitarian minister. I was at his ordination, where they gave him a stole with banjos on it. And, what does following your banjo bliss mean? Well, for Joe, it meant a community organization, a marriage, and ministry. I would say that following the banjo has not served him ill. You know? Do what you love. Do what you love. There is some version of that banjo story, I'm sure.
For everyone.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, it's not always quite that apparent. Follow your bliss. What is your passion? So, for what people do you want to work with? What's your passion? And then, what are you willing to do for this? Okay. Now, I don't just mean, well, I guess I could kind of settle, and I would. I know it's part of it. No. What excites you? What gets you up in the morning? I want this to happen. I want it to do with these person, and I want to do it this way. This would really, you know, what way of putting this together would really excite you? This is how to construct a vision. And you notice that nowhere in here did I ask you anything about what's practical.
Mm-hmm.
That's extremely important. You start talking about what's practical, you're listening to your fears again. And you're going to do what you think you have to. What is it you want? All the best ideas were stupid when somebody thought of them. Right? Federal Express. What a dumb idea. Who is going to pay $25 to mail a letter by plane? You know? Lots of stories like this. Henry Ford decided he wanted an 8-cylinder engine cast out of a single block. He told his engineers that. His engineers said he was insane. He said, I don't care. Do it. And they went to him after 6 months and said, we can't do this. He says, I don't care. Figure it out. 2 years it took them to do this, and then eventually they figured it out. Because as far as Henry Ford was concerned, this is what I want. And that was the end of the discussion. You know? What is it you're willing to do? You want a purpose that's going to drive you. You have to get honest with yourself so that you can be like Henry Ford in that instance. I don't care that it's not possible. This is where we're going with this. You know? Movements start this way, right? Nobody gets appointed the head of a movement. They pretty much anoint themselves, right? How did Gandhi become the head of the movement in India? He didn't. He just started doing it. How did Martin Luther King? He just started doing it. That's how anybody starts. But first, you have to have a passion in what you're going to do, okay, who you want to do this for. Get honest with yourself. When you have a purpose that drives you, make a commitment to yourself to become an unstoppable force for good. You see, you can't become an unstoppable force for good if you're doing what you think you have to or what you should. Okay? That's because then you're going to get stopped easily. Well, I tried, right? Pick something so important for you that no is not a choice. right? The focus project. It was important to Joe, right? There were times they had trouble. Didn't matter. It didn't decide whether he should go forward. The question was, what do we need to do to keep this going and to solve the problem? That's what you want. Now, I'm not saying to be unreasonable. I'm saying your vision has to come from all that. Once you've got it, once you're excited, you're like, yes, you know, this I want to get behind. I want to make this happen. I don't care how long it takes. Now it's time to construct a plan. And yes, your plan should be reasonable, right? But you got to start with the vision. You know, create your purpose first, and then construct reasonable ways to do it. And it's okay to change your plan, to adapt your plan, but not your vision, unless you truly have changed your mind. A friend of mine just last night pointed out she struggled for a long time with this idea of going with the flow. And she said, one day I was walking by the river, and I was looking at it, and I realized rivers don't just flow. They like zigzag down the terrain. Like the water crashes against this bank, and then it crashes against this bank, and it crashes against this bank. Because I can do that. You know? And that's going with the flow. Don't feel that your purpose, whatever you create, is handcuffed. Your purpose and your desire will change because you will change, and it will change continually. All right? The things that you want and how you want them will change faster than you create them, and there's nothing wrong with that. Don't feel that you have to, like, you know, make out a lifelong document and, you know, commit your soul to it. It's like, work in terms of small projects. This is what I'm really excited about. I'm going to work on this month project or this 6 month project or the whatever. And then at the end of the project, you can say, okay, that was fun. Now here's what I want to do next. Or you can say, I want to do more of that, and here's how I'm going to do it this time. Okay? You know, how did this program start? It's a project, right? I'm moving forward. I also could have gotten to the end of this and say, well, that was an experience, so what's next? Right? I've become a firm believer in projects. They let you stop and assess where you are and pay attention because you are going to constantly be in a different place in the same way that the hero changes throughout the story and grows into something greater than he or she could have imagined. And so will you grow into something much greater than you ever could have imagined. So simply continue to take a really honest inventory of where you look, of, you know, what's going on in your life. Pay attention to what's going on in your physical life, in your emotional life, in your mental life, in your spiritual life. Notice it and don't justify it, right? Be honest about it. Make adjustments where you need to. Don't feel you have to take on everything at once. You can't take on everything at once. They'll pile up faster than you can do this. The to-do list, it's a total trap. You will never finish your to-do list. Stop trying. The to-do list has won the battle. Just surrender. Okay? Instead, just pick what are the biggest problems I'm working on and what's the next major forward project I want to take on. Those two things in particular. Remember MTO, right? Marginal Target and Outrageous. Break your life down into manageable chunks. Don't try to take on everything. Do the marginal stuff, some of the target stuff. Jot down great ideas. I love the idea of creating a not doing now list and put all the stuff down there. And the stuff that you're not doing now, that some other day you can do, you can revisit every so often. And revisit every so often and maybe move some things onto your to-do list. But you don't have to do it. Deepen your spiritual practice, okay? Now that you've got some spiritual practice going, you've got a taste of what's that like. Not only continue it, deepen it gradually, bit by bit. keep that going. And help others to do the same, help others with their struggle. All right? Everybody still here?
Yeah.
Yay!
You're still here. Can I ask a question, Tim?
Yes.
With finding, you know, finding my bliss and visioning and all of that, is journaling one of the better tools to help me work through the resistance, like to get to the point where I can really allow myself to believe that I can, you know, imagine myself doing this and start moving and start the wheels turning? And
well, journaling is one of the major tools. Whether it's one of the best tools depends on whether you like journaling or hate it.
I like journaling.
Then I think it's an awesome tool. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, because I just feel I've lived the life of resistance and, well, fear, and I really don't want to be there anymore. But I'm thinking, okay, how do I even know then what I really feel excited about? Because I don't think I've been really excited about very many things.
When I did the reconnection for Alex Basil, he journaled for 2 days straight. You know. I think what happens is that we have gotten so used to turning ourselves off. You know, you ask a little kid, what do you want for Christmas, right? And they go, oh my goodness, I want this, I want that, I want the other thing, I want, you know, and they don't care about reasonable, right? I want a pony, I want a car, a real one, and, you know, and they can go on forever without stopping. If you ask an adult, what would you like for Christmas? I don't know. Ever, maybe a sweater. You know, it's ridiculous. You know.
Yeah, my mother used to ask for new potholders.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I still feel really, I really feel sad about that. You know, some part of me, like, such self denial. No wonder I have trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, it's okay to say I want this, and you don't feel like, you know, I have to have something. You know, maybe what you want is peace, and that has a point. After a while, I think out of that peace will come other things. You know, it's a journey. It doesn't all happen at the same time. It would be a very confusing story if it did. Let it happen, you know? Spiritual practice. Letting images come in. Letting it be fun. You know, if you're sitting down creating your purpose because you feel you really should have to and it's a chore, that's not good. You know, I have to do this now. Tim said I had to create a purpose. Nah. No. If you find yourself doing that, what you should say is, Tim can go to hell because I would rather go do this. And then go do it. But what you're doing is you're creating your purpose and following your own path. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
See, it's one of those, the good news is you get to do anything you want. And the bad news is you have to do anything you want. You know, nobody comes and say, okay, here, open this. It's your bliss. Do you like it? No, doesn't work that way. All right, my final thoughts here is, you know, we started off stepping away from the role of mind, and now I want to come back to it. because the mind does have an extremely important place in our existence. And you remember how we talked about the Atma plane at that level being the very highest part of our existence and the very lowest part of the divine logos of Trinity, okay, of pure essence, of divine spark, and of the world of forms. We start at the world of forms in the Atma. We continue down into denser and denser vibrations, the Buddhic plane, which is our intuition, and then the mental, the emotional, and then finally the physical plane, each with the subsections, right? So, like gases and, you know, liquid solids and so forth. And we've talked about all of the energy as understanding all of it, and also it is reflections of each other, that we start getting insights, as you yourselves have described, when all that is aligned well, whether through the reconnection or accidental alignment or any related practice, so that we're not simply trying to lift a heavy board from one end or the other, from the physical or the spiritual. But in the same way that the Atma is what joins us to the divine and to the Oversoul, the mind is what joins the physical to what we think of as our body. And so if you go back to that Leadbeater chart again, the levels of being, you know, the three aspects of the reincarnating soul would be spirit, which is at the very bottom of the Atma plane. And that part of us that we would recognize as intuition, which is in the Buddha plane, and then the very highest part of the mental plane is the lowest part of the three-part notion of our soul. And again, you see this repeated throughout the Tarot of will looking towards intuition, looking up at awareness of spirit. But that highest mental plane is then what connects with the rest of that highest mental aspect, the bottom part of our soul, is it connects to the highest part of our mind, which is connects us to the body as a garment that we think of as in, you know, the mental. Remember that emotions are reflections of our thoughts, and we already know how emotions can manifest themselves in the physical world. So in the same way that the Atma is kind of the connection between us and the divine, the mind, it's pretty much the connection between you in the body sense and you in the soul sense. And as such, it has an extremely important role to play. Where we run into trouble is when the ego wants thoughts to be everything. It's like, I am the mind and I am now the divine. It doesn't quite work that way. And that's where we start running into many of the problems that we talked about before, or earlier sessions. But if we remain clear of that, as long as the mind doesn't try to pretend that it's all that it is, the mind is an extremely powerful tool. It's an extremely powerful tool. Plato was right. The world of ideas is far more important than the world of shadows. Napoleon Hill was right. If you get a definite major purpose and a major idea and you focus on that, you know, you're unstoppable. That we really are that powerful at that level. Joseph Campbell was right. You know, follow your bliss. Because when you do, you will become an unstoppable force for good. The obstacles are just trials along the way. It's kind of trite, but accurate to say that, you know, at what point have you failed? That's when you decide to stop trying. And until then, it's just another chapter in the book. It's important to take something that we want to move forward towards. So, having gone through these 8 weeks together, you are much more aware of your actual nature. You are much more in tune. You have many great steps for moving forward. And how that works, from awareness to transformation and now to intention and how to start to use your intention. What you do with that from here is, I can't wait to see. But those are the aspects, and that's the full journey. From here, it's putting it into practice, going from theory into reality, and going from your experience into starting to guide that experience towards your vision, towards your passion, towards your channels, and giving yourself a break. It's not going to go smoothly. It's going to be, growth. You're going to crash into one bank and then the other bank and then the other bank, and it's all good.
Mm-hmm.
It's all stuff that you need to learn so that you can take that sun chariot across the sky safely and not prematurely. And with that, I would love to hear your takeaways.
Bon voyage. To everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's exciting. It's really exciting when you think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. The world is all but possibilities.
Right. And sometimes we don't really know what we want to do until we look at something that we know we don't want to do. And that helps us narrow it down, too.
Yeah. I love the way that Abraham cast that.
Exactly.
It's like we learned from contrast.
Mm-hmm.
What we don't want, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and anything. And for me, this is particularly apparent in it's apparent in work choices. It's apparent in relationship choices, right? How do I make better relationship choices than I did before? Well, after dating the wrong people for a while. But I didn't know that at the time.
Experience keeps a dear school.
Yeah. I love that joke about, I forgot who said this. Will Rogers, maybe. It sounds like him. That good judgment comes from experience, and experience comes from poor judgment.
Okay.
I have a lot of experience.
I think we all do, really.
Yeah. Well, I wish you all well, and we have some follow-up stuff, and I know that we have some bonus calls coming up. So I'm going to end the recording for a minute, and then we'll just do some final housekeeping stuff here. So hang on just for a minute. And if you are joining us only for the recording, I wish you well, and I'll see you on the Facebook group.